Philadelphia Union, San Jose, or DC United, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, Orlando City SC, Montreal Impact, NYCFC, Seattle Sounders.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Welcome. This is back-to-back weeks. Although, I will say, the two episodes ago, we had Charles Bohm on. The episode before that, we had Pablo on. The last episode, we had Pablo on. And now we've got Charles Bohm on again. I'm starting to fall into a rut. I just go to my go-tos. And these are my guys. These are my people. These are the only people who say yes to the podcast. So these are the people that I have on. And yes, in the Pablo Charles chart, we are now back on Charles. So Charles Bohm of SoccerWire, of MLSsoccer.com, just a great writer of the sport here in the United States, is joining me on this episode to Pitch Pass. So thank you, Charlie, for continuing to be a guest on the show.
I will always say yes to you wherever possible, Rush, and it's an honor. It's actually an honor. I really mean that. Okay. I really mean that. I mean, and you say these nice things about me, so how can I say no?
So, look, the thrust of what I really want to talk about is your latest piece for, was that MLS Soccer or was that on SoccerWire?
Yeah.
It was MLS?
Yeah.
Your latest piece on the Lucy Rushton hire as it pertains to Hernan Losada, and then the bigger picture of what it means for DC United as an organization. But I think in this first segment, we don't have to drive too far deep into it. I don't really want to put a lot of over-analysis into one match, the first match of the season. This was our first glimpse, though, as a collective of what DC United might look like or the path that they want to be on moving forward in their match, which was a win versus NYCFC. So let's just do some top-line conversation. What were your kind of main takeaways from having seen that match on Saturday at Audi Field?
I was sad, one, that I couldn't attend in person because I was really intrigued to get a firsthand glimpse of the dawn of the Losada era. But I had to cover a previous match, the LA Austin game. So I watched on DCUnited.com. By the way, if you're in a 75-mile radius of Audi Field, I believe it is, you have very easy access right now, and I think for the foreseeable future to the DC games. And I'll tell you what, at the very least, the new system and the new coach has made for what I would consider an upgraded entertainment product. And look, from the national perspective, there's a lot more curiosity about DC United than there has been for some time. And it's the kind of curiosity, it's, you know, okay, is this going to be a great success story or is this going to be a plane crash? Either way, we want to watch,
right?
Because there's some interesting ideas at work. Losada's personality, the youngest coach in the league by 2 years, the sort of way he's attacked the job so far and kind of, you know, called his players out. It's all very intriguing. And I found it a promising start. You know, they had to come back from an early deficit. Clearly this is an early days. There's a lot of work to do. This is a sea change in how this team plays and really thinks and acts in many different contexts. And so I think you should expect things to, they should expect, and we should all expect things to move upwards from here. But it was a pretty good start. And I'm going to turn this question around on you, cause I want to know what you, on a strictly spectator perspective, were thinking and feeling for those 90 plus minutes.
Like you, I was entertained, and I think that for me was the refreshing thing, was that this team wasn't. It's weird because it's definitely not a kind of, I don't want to say beautiful because that's I don't think that does it justice. The interesting thing was that this team doesn't just, it's not like an all go 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 attack 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 mindset, but it is a, look, we have the ball. First thought is, let's break some lines. Let's get the ball forward and let's see what we can get going. And to me, that was the refreshing change, was not how long can we absorb pressure until we eventually break. It was more so, look, we're going to be on you from the first minute and we're going to do our best to be on you for the entire match. It really brought into focus for me all of Losada's comments leading up to the match of, this team's not fit enough. it kind of reinforced what all the writers were saying, which was he's not saying that this team is unfit. He's saying that this team is not fit enough to do what he wanted them to do. And I think I saw on Saturday, yeah, I could see why you'd need to be not just fit, not just 90 minutes fit, but 90 minutes intensely fit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, there had been talk, and I'd written for U.S. soccer players about his Marcelo Bielsa-like, maybe obsession is colors it too much, but certainly high level of prioritization of, you know, body weight. I mean, they're using these $12,000 to $15,000 DEXA scanners instead of calipers. They're weighing the guys. There's this really high priority on maximum fitness, just turning these guys into greyhounds as much as possible. And I could see the physical difference in some of these players. I was like, Julian Gressel was like, I was like, man, I'm worried about you. Like, this is, I don't know what your BMI is down to, but my God, clearly the coach has been, the new regime has been chipping away at you. And, and there's a whole episode to be done about that, because we get into, really fraught territory of body image, and is this really necessary? And is this really the metric by which you measure whether a player can flourish in your system? But, you know, again, we have a new coach to MLS who hasn't sort of, he's young, he's a little bit, he's intelligent, he's ambitious, a little bit brash maybe, yeah. Hasn't picked up that sort of language or set of terms that we see a lot in a lot of MLS coaches and executives, of a certain way you talk, and you don't, you know, you couch your goals or the things you say about the game and your team. And, you know, that whole kind of linguistic vagueness, right? He's to the point, and that's great for us. Maybe somebody will get in his ear at some point. I really hope not, because he's laid it out there. And I think the players are ready to make these sacrifices, because they've been frustrated by mediocrity or outright, you know, what's worse. I mean, a poor results, sort of a stagnation around the club. And so right now I think he's got the buy-in that may get harder in the months to come, because they're going to play teams. And he's said this. I mean, one of the things that struck me from the availability he did a few weeks ago was, if we want to play against teams with better players than we have, that spend more than we do, we have to be the fittest team in the league, right? And there's a whole thing about he's not going to get to where he wants in terms of fitness in one preseason or maybe even in one season. And this is probably a good segue to the Rushton conversation, because the sports science people around the league that I've talked to, and I just happen to be researching a big analytics piece that I'm working on. And so I was able to ask a couple of smart people in this business about what Losada said. And they said, look, this is recruitment. You can whip your players into shape. You can change their diets and their lifestyles and try to recenter their whole approach to how they go about their profession. But if you really want to be a team of, you know, greyhound pressing, relentless, runners who can do the things you want them to do, you're going to have to bring in new players. You're going to have to build your recruitment profile around what you're looking for. And so that's a longer term process, of course. I don't think that they're going to, there's no near term chances, as from what I can tell, that they're going to start breaking the bank, right? This team is in a certain financial place, but you can still get a lot done in MLS. There's so many ways to be efficient. And so Lucy Rushton coming in is really intriguing. And I'm particularly find it interesting that she is coming in and not at the expense of someone else, right? There's a conventional wisdom or perception on the outside that someone like that would come in at the expense of Dave Casper. And although I sense in the interviews that she's done so far that maybe that's all a little bit in flux, and maybe it's not entirely certain how things are going to work on the day-to-day, for sure you've been able to add human capital without losing some of the advantages you have in terms of Dave Casper, you know, knowing how to get deals done, digging up bargains and undervalued assets and that sort of thing.
That's a great point that I had not thought about. And you're right. Usually the United way is one in, one out. And the fact that they're just adding to staff rather than replacing staff is a great sign and a great harbinger of things to come. Before we get to all that, though, I kind of want there's a couple of more things I want to get on for the match against NYC. Mm-hmm. There were three things, and they involved players, but more so positioning, that said to me, this isn't my older brother's DC United anymore. And the three kind of things that I'm thinking of is, first of all, it was a multiple effort by Junior Moreno and Russell Knauss to, as I said, break lines. When they got the ball, the goal wasn't to recycle back and then start building up from the back, and not even in the cool at Manchester City way, more of the let's hold the ball for 15 seconds so we can all catch our breath before we give it back to them and have to absorb again. I felt from both of them, especially Knauss, I'm biased, he's my favorite player, especially from Knauss, he was looking to make plays that weren't just side to side to Moreno and back, but also not even out to the wings, but also, hey, let's get it forward to Edison. Let's get it forward to Sorga with one pass rather than that traditional way that United has always played. I thought that was a really good sign of things to come. The second part was Joseph Mora, for me, always been an underrated asset to the team. I kind of dismissed him of, okay, well, if they're playing three at the back, Moore is going to be somebody coming off the bench. He played the left back, wing back role really well. His shot on target, he was actually driving up the middle, and he was dribbling up the middle and took a shot. And I thought that was a really great sign of, hey, stop underestimating my importance in this team from Joseph Moore. And also a great sign of, hey, the left wing back is driving up the center as if he is a number 10 and is going to rip a shot off. Didn't think Joseph Moore had that in his bag, which was amazing to see. And then the last thing before I throw it back to you, Brendan Hines-Ike's goal does not get scored in the last 15 years from DC United, and not because they didn't have center backs who could do that. I don't even know if Hines-Ike can do that, but the fact that he was so far up on that play is something that you would never see DC United center backs. They would be at the center line, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Hines-Ike was basically just maybe 10, 15 yards out of the top of the box. That didn't happen in your older brother's DC United. And those three things kind of encapsulate what was exciting to me about that match was these guys are popping up in different positions. They're looking to do different things, and they're not looking to just hang and absorb pressure.
One of the phrases that I've heard repeatedly around the league about playing, for example, so let's start with the Red Bulls. And there's the comparison between the new DC United and the Red Bulls is limited, but it's not exactly the same thing, but there's definitely principles that are shared. And when people prepare to play the Red Bulls, and then when they actually play them, people say things like, you know, these games don't look like any other games in this league. Like when we play the Red Bulls, you're pulled out of your comfort zone on at least a basic level, that the shaping, the shape of the team, the spacing, the places the game is played, the first advantage they have is just from the jump. You have to, everything feels different from a normal or typical MLS game. I don't know what a normal MLS game is at this point, but you know, when you internalize that concept as when it comes to your team, there's a learning curve there for sure. But the benefit is that there's this discomfort that comes with playing a team that does that. And it's sort of like this, the teams that do what DC United are trying to do will push you back into your own box without you even realizing it. Yeah. Suddenly you're playing in your lap and the goalkeeper's bumping into the center backs. And it's like, okay, we have to lump, right? Like, all right. Mm-hmm. And then it's almost like it becomes a rugby match in some ways where the concept of territorial advantage actually enters on a level that it doesn't often in other situations in soccer. So I think that's an opportunity for every player on this team. I mean, every player is trying out and really in a way that they haven't had to for a while. So we're going to see things from guys that we haven't seen before. I mean, Knauss, arguably man of the match, right? And beyond just the goal, but this is a guy who was playing a deep midfield role early in the Rooney era at a national team level. Yep. I mean, he got called into, I think, January camp he was very much in the mix. You saw the skill set that got him to the Bundesliga or to a Bundesliga club at a young age. And Ben Olsen, I think, really liked him as a player and as a person. But he would just stick him in where he could. Right, he played a lot of right back, and I was frustrated by that, even though he could certainly do it well. And so I think you're seeing some players maybe seizing the opportunity. They've had a couple of months now to embrace and understand what they can do and sort of figure out what's in their toolkit that they can put to work on this scenario. And so that's really interesting. I mean, another notable aspect of that game. Zero homegrowns, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the story of last year. The silver lining of DC United 2020 was those kids making a statement. I don't think that that's a permanent state of affairs, but maybe there's some tea leaves that you can read there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the last time I had you on, it was all about academies, and specifically in that episode, the Philadelphia Union Academy. And I was lamenting the whole episode of, hey, let's go all in on these kids. But I think the bigger point for me wasn't let's go all in on the kids, but let's go all in on a thought process. And the fact that it feels like that they are, and we'll talk about this more in the second segment, that they are inching towards the all in on a thought process. And if it's not the kids, I'm okay with that as long as we're going all in on a thought process. So I was actually like, yeah, there weren't any homegrowns, but I was so happy that there was some sort of cohesive thought process that I was like, yeah, if it didn't involve the kids this match, I'm totally fine with that. Here's a question to you. And as I was trying to give you my thoughts on the match, my top line thoughts, the word beautiful came out. And then I was like, nah, it wasn't beautiful. There is a grit to it. But it's not negative soccer. But it's definitely not the beautiful game. It's definitely not, you know, a Brazilian way. It's definitely not a Manchester City way. There is a workmanlike quality to it, but there's kind of a workmanlike elegance to it as well. And that's why it's so difficult to kind of put my finger on what I was, other than just kind of satisfied from what I was seeing. What are you thinking in your head as this style is unfolding in front of you? Because it can't be beautiful. It's not on that side of the coin. But it's also not negative either. So what is it?
Yeah, well, the whole concept of beauty in soccer is fascinating to me, right? I mean, different people will find beauty in different things. But at one point they were passing, I'm looking at the stats here. So DC United passed had a passing accuracy percentage over the course of the game as a team of 58.1%, which is, you know, people, if
that's a loss. Barcelona, that's a loss.
Barcelona, that's like a crisis, right?
Yes.
That's like people are vomiting in the hallways because that's simply like just heinous. And so, but there's a rhyme to that. There's a rhyme and reason to why that is. And again, it comes into, I think, some of that territorial aspect. The press wants to enforce or inflict a certain discomfort and almost panic at the worst of it on the opposition, and change the tempo, change the thought, the sort of internal clock that the players and the game itself is operating under, and where the game is being played, right? So Losada wants, he's comfortable with, you know, dumping it in behind in certain moments, or passes that that maybe are a low percentage of completion, but even their non-completion puts the game in a different state, right?
Correct.
And
yeah.
Has a center, a defender, an opposing defender playing with their, you know, facing their own goal in uncomfortable situations. And so, again, right now, I think as the group hones those ideas, and becomes better. And he used the term, automation, there's other languages have better words for it than we do, but he's already looking for, he wants to see progress in sort of the team's unconscious execution through repetitions, through understanding, through the scouting, all these things they do of patterns, combinations, actions in certain moments, whether it's with or without the ball. And so they will improve and everything will get more fluid. But I think the overriding thing is that he wants them to be doing things faster than they've done them before.
Yeah.
Imperfection is okay if we get this the speed we want. So if we get the speed up and then we can get the precision to come along with it, then you start to become a kind of a really difficult team to play against. And that's, I mean, I think that's a good starting point, because
Agreed.
If nothing else, you know, like what Matias Almeida has done with the San Jose Earthquakes, for example. You know, there's games where they've absolutely gotten it handed to them, right? I mean, they've been part of some of the most one-sided score lines in MLS over the past 2 years. But when it's working, they can beat anyone. I mean, they can make anyone sweat. And so I think that's a good place for DC United to be right now, when we know that there's going to be a lot of games they're playing where they're going to be facing elite levels of talent that they, you know, on paper, they can't necessarily match up toe-to-toe. So then you change the terms of the game in order to equalize.
So I want to ask you about the San Jose model as it relates to DC United. But to your point, it's a great one. For me, the time of possession, which was also in the craptacular category, and as well as the passes completed, you look at those two stats and you go, this team got ran off.
38.3% possession.
So you would look at those stats and go, obviously NYC ran them off the field. But I love what you just said, and to go back to Canales and what I liked from him was, okay, yeah, the possession wasn't great, but a lot of it had to do with Canales winning the ball and then immediately looking for Sorga and bypassing the midfield and trying to make that pass. And if the pass isn't completed, to your point about it's kind of in the old baseball terms, it's a productive out. It's one of those things where, okay, the center backs of NYC are thinking to themselves, DC United doesn't make that pass. So if the number six has the ball, we're fine. Now all of a sudden it's, oh, wait a second, he's going to try that pass and it just missed. Like, I had to come and cut that out. Next time, maybe now the center back is shading in an area where they weren't shading before, which then opens up another pass later on in the game. To that, to your point of what you're saying, that has nothing to do with possession, has nothing to do with completed pass, but it was a quick possession with an incomplete pass that served the purpose that we can utilize later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting to see the different permutations of this kind of ideology are spreading across MLS, and it's you know, it was the Red Bulls thing for a long time, and now you have the opening game of the weekend was Quakes at Houston Dynamo on Friday night, and Tab Ramos, the who's in the second year in charge of Houston, likes a lot of these same ideas, has his own sort of riff on it. And so to watch, you know, more and more, you know, pressing teams play pressing teams, and the,
right.
It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, right? I mean, and it's going to look ugly to some people. In other cases, it's played at a tempo that makes it interesting, even when it's imperfect, right? And I'd rather watch that. And I think what Losada is already done is probably lifted the floor on DC United, you know, and I don't know what the ceiling looks like yet, but when you execute his system at a, you know, poorly, you still maybe have a better chance than if you're trying to do something more methodical.
Right.
Ben, a lot of Ben's teams would really try to build out, play positively and proactively. And if you're not executing it at a high level, or you don't have players that have the skill set to do it at a high level, the opposition takes it away from you, goes right down your throat and destroys you. Right. I mean, just,
right.
you can lose in these really dispiriting, humbling, frustrating ways that have a knock-on effect of their own. So I think we don't know yet what the real upside is, but I certainly think that DC are going to be a tougher out than they were last year, for example.
And under the last regime, there was a finality to every goal that the other team scored, where it was like, we're just hanging on, and then you give up the goal, and you're like, I guess the game's over at this point, which, you know, I didn't feel that way because they scored so early, but also the way that they immediately, like, they were on the back foot until the goal, and then as soon as NYC scored, for me, that's when DC kind of asserted themselves, which was something that I was definitely pleasantly surprised to see. So the last thing on this point, I don't know, because I haven't watched enough San Jose to really know what their man-marking uniqueness of their system is. You've talked with Losada a few times at this point. Is the final result going to resemble more the San Jose way of playing, the Red Bulls way of playing, the Leeds way of playing, or some cross-section of everything, or none of those things?
Yeah, I think I can't answer that yet definitively, but I haven't seen, and I'd probably need to watch back the DC NYC game but I don't recall there being that the thing that Almeida does, and people, I mean, in a lot of ways it's very Leeds like, is the man marking in defense. So, you know, it's 1-to-1. Right. Everybody's got somebody on the other side, and where they go, you go. Mm-hmm. Right. And the games look so weird sometimes because the Quakes right back has chased the left winger across the field. It's just like, you know, and I know coaches will say, opposing coaches have said some funny stuff, but it's like, I don't know even what I'm looking at. Right? Like, why is the game like, what are these patterns? And so, so that's, I didn't see quite that yet. I mean, maybe who knows what wrinkles he's got up his sleeve. And Losada has sort of accepted the Bielsa comparisons without really fully embracing it. He's usually pushed back a little in the sense that he talks about his own ideas. And he's been in the Belgian league for some time as both a player and coach. And there's, you know, I mean, the Argentinian sort of managerial legacy is like, there's so many, he's played for great managers as a player. It's inculcated. There's so many different ideas, right? So I'm sure he's going to be distinct. But there does seem to be a little bit more of a slightly more conventional concept of team shape, which I would think is, just again, an easier platform to build off of and to start with, because you're handing your guys so many other things that they have to come to grips with that are new.
He did a great job in the preseason, really tempering United supporters' expectations whilst also giving them a lot of cause for optimism, which is a really, really difficult tightrope to walk in any situation, but especially with this fan base. He did a really good job of doing it. So I went into the match on Saturday thinking, I just want to see something. I want to see something. And I saw something, and I was really happy. And the fact that they were able to bag 3 points, to me, is just a cherry on top of the sundae, because at this point, I wasn't expecting any points this early. For me, he had done a great job of kind of conditioning me to go, don't look for results this early. And so to already get 3 points in the bank and being one of two, I think, Eastern Conference teams to get points, look, they count in April just like they count in October. So to have those 3 points already in, to me, is a huge cherry on top of the sundae. Then I factor in who didn't play, and I think to myself, if you can incorporate real quality, and I'm not saying United is just overflowing with quality, but they had quality. They have quality that is not playing right now that you can infuse into this team. And somebody like Paul Arriola feels to me like he would just excel in this kind of a system. So you think to yourself, who wasn't available for him, and he was still able to pull 3 points. He was still able to present a version of soccer that seems like what he was talking about all offseason. And that version seemed exciting to me. All feels like just a total win beyond the 3 points, which was just awesome. My only question is, how's this going to work in July at a 4 o'clock match at Audi Field in the middle of a swamp? Are these players going to be able to breathe after 60 minutes? But that's what Losada has kind of been clear on. This is why I'm telling you, they're not 90 minutes fit for what we want to do.
That's when you call the 19-year-olds.
Fresh legs.
Well, but yeah, I mean, to your point, one of the snippets from his post-game press conference that caught my ear was, and I'll quote here, "We can be a lot better than what we are tonight. That's why I'm so happy with the points against a very good opponent, a team who invested a lot more than us."
Mm-hmm.
And I do enjoy, again, as far as, you know, sort of money is sort of sometimes an oblique topic around MLS, and he is again maybe part of that tempering expectations, like, hey guys, you know, here's what I'm working with, here's how it's going to go until I get an Atlanta level roster, maybe, which even if it doesn't happen, he's going to push for, right? Imagine when the 10 players that we have with injuries are coming back. And he's right. I mean, it's a long injury list right now, including starting goalkeeper, you know, arguably your captain. I mean, if you can, I don't know technically who's been given, if he's given anyone the armband, but like Arriola is a captain level player and designated player. And there's a bunch of other bodies that I think that will help them a lot. So it is a promising place for them to be after week one.
Agreed. And that's a great way to put it. Promising place to be after week one. We'll talk about what's going on behind the scenes, because to me, that's the more exciting thing. And the thing that's, I think, is going to be more impactful if you're a DC United fan long term. And we'll do that with Charlie Boehm next on Pitch Pass. Craft beer lovers, if you haven't checked out my craft beer lifestyle podcast, Head Retention, not sure what you're waiting for. We just talk about the things that you would talk about if you were hanging out at your local brewery, specifically craft beer, but also the issues surrounding craft beer as well. Head Retention is the name of that podcast. You can check that out, as well as my Pearl Jam-focused podcast, Jam Elite Matters. If Pearl Jam is, in your opinion, one of the greatest rock bands of all time, then you should check out this podcast called Jam Elite Matters. We talk about the cultural influence, the music, the impact of Pearl Jam in our society in Jam Elite Matters. Available with Head Retention through the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Pitch Pass is about the local soccer team. What about the local bands in the area? Can I get some information and some listening on that, Roach? Yes, you can. The latest episode of my Sphere of Roach podcast is all about All Time Low, the Baltimore-based band that had maybe the biggest alternative rock song in 2020 in Monsters. I talked with Alex, lead singer, songwriter, guitarist of All Time Low recently, and we talked about the success of Monsters, the brand new song Once in a Lifetime, which, by the way, please track that song down. It is a bop. Plus, as an added bonus, we look back and talk about the conversation Alex and I had back in January 2007. He came into the DC 101 studios, he played Coffee Shop Soundtrack, and we talked about what the future would hold. 15 years later, he probably undershot it a little bit. Listen to the conversation we had in 2021, in 2007, and the performance from 2007, all in the latest episode of The Sphere of Roach. Available through the iHeartRadio app or wherever you listen to your podcast, including DC101.com. Welcome back. And look, we talked about the first game of the season. That was great. But to me, that's just kind of that's basically not even an appetizer. That's an hors d'oeuvre for what to me is the bigger topic. And Charlie's been all over this with multiple columns about Losada and then the hiring of Lucy Rushton as GM, new GM of DC United. And that, as a fan, is much more exciting and promising to me. I will start by asking you this question, and there's a number of ways to go, but I want to start with Losada since we're coming right off of the match. Whenever a new boss starts a job, at least from my experience and seeing in the workplace, I always judge what I think their long-term impact is going to be by how much swagger they walk in with. And by the swagger, I mean, you were hired to manage people or do a job. You've been given an inherent amount of credit by your employers. Do you walk in going, I've got 6 months, I'm just going to burn through all my credit and do things and implement things that I want implemented because they're not going to say no now because I'm the new kid on the block? Or am I going to try to blend in and kind of use my credit judiciously? I'm a huge fan of the guy who walks in and burns his credit right off the bat because it's, hey, look, I'm the new boss. This is what I want. And this is what I need to do the things that you hired me to do. I've seen Losada do that from little things like, well, I don't even know if it's a little thing, making the field smaller, the length of the field smaller, to saying, this is the kind of player that I need. You need to start putting together a dossier of players like this. In your conversations with Losada, am I on the mark in the fact that he's come in with that kind of swagger of, you hired me, you got to do some stuff that I've asked to be done?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and there's an element of risk, I think.
Correct.
He's not that much older than some of the players he's working with. He didn't come in with a big resume, right? I mean, and he was... I wish I could say this in a way that sounds less harsh, but he was not the first choice. We can only conclude, and based on reporting and reading between the lines, that there were probably one or two guys that were you know, got the offer or got even, I think, from what I understand, pretty far into negotiations on a contract for things to break down. So that vacancy was open for quite some time. He was brought to their attention. I think there was either an agent or a headhunting sort of connection. And then he won them over and something had to get done. So, you know, you could all, again, conventionally speaking, you could interpret all that as being sort of little chips away at his leverage or his bargaining power. But to his credit, I think he's been pretty bold and pretty assertive. And I think he feels like his methods and his tactical ideas require full commitment all around. You know, there's no half stepping with some of the ideas that he has. And so he laid it out there. I mean, and it's funny, after the article about the fitness stuff and the body fat and everything, a couple of New England Revolution fans said, "Wow, this sounds nervous from a DC perspective. This sounds a lot like what Brad Friedel said when he got here." Right? So Brad Friedel came in with a lot of capital, incredible track record as a player, and it was early in his coaching career, but had this sort of demeanor that suggested that he'd get buy-in, and they had some good results early on. But he ultimately, when the results went south, and his sort of old school EPL driven or EPL sort of inspired ideas of professionalism and how we dress and how fit you're supposed to be, even when I remember he popped off against what he thought was the players union and the CBA sort of protecting his players from maintaining what he thought was a basic standard of fitness for a professional player. And he sort of went at his players with varying degrees of explicit sort of criticism, in the media. And eventually it was like ding dong, the witch is dead, when right. He finally got fired, right? When the results went away and didn't come back. And since Bruce Arena came in, they've been, cruising pretty well, and they're now considered, one of the East top teams. So, that I thought that was an interesting.
Yeah. I never thought of that. That's a little scary. Now you've scared me. Thank you.
there is a different context, because again, the DC United have been down at the heels for some time. These players, I think, were ready. They were ready to embrace this, even if it came with challenges. And if you, even if you're, you have a sort of a harsh message, you can, you can soften it, and you can make it exciting and easier to embrace with the way you package it and the personality you have. And the guy's got charisma. He speaks multiple languages. Right. I think he's able to communicate in the first language of everybody on his roster or close to it. And then when you get, you just get a few results like Saturday night, your capital ramps up dramatically. But he's already said, I didn't transcribe it. One of the things he said in the press conference after the game was striking. He said, talking about the style and the philosophy, he said, hopefully after I'm gone, DC United will like this and we'll stick with it. And it was like, this guy is already thinking.
But I love that. I love that.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to hear he's 38 or whatever, right? A guy that age who's already, there's a term they have in Germany, the laptop managers or laptop coaches. And I forget the long German word that it comes from, but Nagelsmann and these type of guys, and Rosa, like, there's this breed now of sort of pan-European guys who maybe started coaching, maybe quit as a player in order to start focusing on coaching. And they're extremely sort of technically trained, and they have very clear ideas. They're embracing data.
Yeah.
They're the modern coach that sort of defies our conventional ideas of what a coach looks and acts like. And
Jesse Marsh, you can throw him in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I would categorize him as well.
The thing that I like about Losada, this isn't a Losada appreciation episode, by the way. The separator. Well, you scared me with the Brad Fiedel stuff, Charlie. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, what are the differences? And one of the differences I thought was when Friedel came in, it felt like your dad was coaching the team, and it was like, all right, he's got all this gravitas because of his long career in the Premier League. Losada said things that could have been divisive, and as he's saying them in such a breezy, casual, friendly way that you're just like, yeah, he just caught everybody unfit, but it's fine because he was cool about it. And then the players come in and go, yeah, for what he wants to do, we do need this kick in the butt. So it was, I just felt like his delivery was just a lot more receptive to criticism than Friedel's, which was just, this is what I think. Everybody's got to fall in line.
Yeah, I mean, and the club social media accounts are posting thirst traps of him in his, sideline gear and stuff.
So, and he looks great. I looked up that jacket as soon as that match was over, because I was like, wait, what? That jacket that he wore on the match was amazing. I would love that jacket. $55, by the way, on Fanatics, just if anybody wants to plug.
The social capital of football, right?
So to keep it from becoming a Losada appreciation episode, here's my question to you, and I don't know if you want to speculate on this or if you have some kind of knowledge or whatever you want to share, but I think if Chris Armas is the hire, and from all accounts he was close to being the hire, my thought process is, okay, is Lucy Rushton here if Chris Armas is the coach? Was the Losada hiring maybe not the person himself, but the type of coach that they decided to hire? Was that, do you think, the first domino to fall in a reimagination from the ownership group of, okay, if we're going to hire this guy who is about analytics and is about a certain style and a certain player needed for the certain style, we kind of need to start dropping those other dominoes of, well, we probably need an analytics person in here. And if we're going to get an analytics person in here, we probably want one of the best. And if it's Lucy Rushton, we can't just offer her a title of analyst, head of analytics department. We've got to give her a bigger title. Was the Losada hire the beginning of that? Or do you think this would have happened if they had hired Armas?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, Armas having come up in the Red Bull way, and that, you know, they use some of these same ideas and resources. So I it's tough to say. I mean, my understanding of the Armas situation was that he was taking what by MLS coaching standards was a modest, he was ready to sign off on a modest deal that did not pay him in the top echelon of MLS coaches. And you can certainly construct a situation in which a club in DC United's position would have to pay a premium, right, to get someone to come in and take over. But I think there's this combination of, DC is an intriguing market, it's an intriguing city. Mm-hmm. It has a global sort of reputation. There is increasingly, and I'm struck by this, and some agents I've spoken with would probably say that it actually dates back further even than we think, but that candidates from outside didn't even get a chance. I mean, there's people who have an interest in MLS. And there's guys, I mean, when you see someone like Gabriel Heinze to come here, right? And we tend to say, oh, well, he took the Atlanta job. That's the, spendiest team in the league, maybe. And there's all this glitz. But there's an intrigue that even though there's no promotion relegation, even though it is a sort of footballing frontier, the circumstances of the league, the evenness of it, you know, the unpredictability, the opportunity to live in the US or Canada and see the lifestyle, the embrace of technology. I mean, there's a fertile sort of situation here that maybe a lot of fans don't grasp. I mean, you can get calls back that you certainly would not have had a prayer of getting 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so even the most down at the heels club in MLS is, I think, can market itself to some pretty smart people abroad. And so I would categorize that here. But again, you know, if you are moving in a globalization direction, which I think we are, I mean, this league is as it's grown, as the ownership has become more diverse, it's getting more cosmopolitan. It's not quite this sort of strange bubble off in the wilderness. It's even though it does still have its own quirks, the European model is to have a trainer. Losada in this hierarchy is the trainer, is focused on the team. Then you support him with people above him on the chain who are also less disposable, right? So conceivably the results turn bad, Losada loses the locker room, you can change him out without having to blow up the whole system. So I think, and he's obliquely referenced this and some of the things he said that, he's building something that can outlast him. Right. And so obviously as a coach, you want to go out as a champion and move on up. But even if it doesn't end the way you want, you leave a legacy. And I think that's some of what we're seeing. I think I sense that the decision makers at the top of the DC United structure are also really intrigued by the idea of they hired Danita Johnson as the first woman in the president in the league. And that's her remit is mostly on the business side. But why not do that again, right? They got a lot of positive press for that. I think it connects with the DC core, like district demographic that they're trying to connect with or reconnect with. And then when you have someone, I mean, again, like Atlanta is now a big enough, successful enough club that there's probably, Lucy may have looked and not necessarily seeing an obvious path for timely advancement, right? I mean, who's going to leave or how many new positions can be created. And so, you know, you can make a play for someone like that. And I have not had the chance to speak with her myself. I'm hoping to get something lined up this week. But I think she's a really widely respected person.
Yes.
And then her work as well, has become very regarded very highly. And even if you go back, I mean, before Atlanta, she was with Reading. I want to say it was her previous team before that. I think she'll find, I think she's familiar with a different setting, with a little bit less cash, in the wallet, you know, that you're provided by ownership. And so I think she can thrive in this situation they're building in DC.
So let's go back to what we talked about in the first segment, which was your point, which I think is a fantastic one, which is the fact that this isn't replacing somebody. This is adding to the staff, whatever the case may be. I think as a DC United fan, my big frustration is the half measures and then I don't want to say the cheapness, but the turnover which has always been troubling to me. So the fact that they kept Dave Casper in, whatever you think about Dave Casper, I personally think he still can be a huge asset in what you said in the first segment, which is, look, just because they're changing kind of the thought process doesn't mean that he can't help fill the player profile that they're putting together and find that person, that gem who maybe isn't being utilized because the player isn't playing in the system that DC is playing, and maybe he can thrive in. I think Dave Casper can thrive in that circumstance. So I love the fact that not only did they bring in a GM, but they brought in somebody not at the expense of somebody else. In your dealings and discussions with the team over the last 3 or 4 months, does it feel different? Does it feel like the ownership group has kind of seen the light in that we need to do X amount of things? We don't have to spend a crap ton of money to do it, but we do need to do some things to focus what the vision of what we want our club to be.
To a point, and I would say probably modest, because, you know, we've seen, you know, one change, right? A new head coach. And I want to say all this in a way that shows respect to Ben Olsen, who I genuinely like and respect as a person, and as a soccer brain and who jumped on so many grenades for this club for so many years. Right. But inevitably when someone is in the same job, a position of that influence for 10 years, or actually more than that, some stagnation sets in. Right. And for a while it looked like Wayne Rooney was going to be the catalyst for systemic or fundamental change and reinvention. And that's a lot, right, to put on any player, but it just about was working.
Yep.
But I think that papered over that sort of stagnation that was still happening. Right. And technically there's been an ownership change, but it doesn't really feel like it.
Right.
Jason Levien is still the guy. And we're told that Kaplan is very involved, very interested, has made a good impression on other executive level people around MLS. And that's great, but he's not doing media.
Right.
So unfortunately, I mean, I'm sorry, guys, like if Zach or Sam, if you're listening, like the communication staff, like I don't know why that is. I don't know if he just doesn't like doing media at all. If it's a Kroenke situation or an Anschutz situation, or if they're waiting for the right time or what it is. But, you know, I still don't think when the same people are in the same roles, there's a limit to the reinvention. Not that, and maybe you can, within those limits, you can still get to the place you want to get to. But, you know, and obviously COVID and the pandemic and any vision or timeline they may have had for opening up the purse strings, and sort of letting the new revenue picture sort of blossom into a spendier approach was railroaded by COVID. And that's not their fault. But we know also that the league's financial picture is better than almost any other league, you know, given what's happened over the last 14 months. I mean, they extracted a almost punitive level of cost savings from the players in the last, in this new CBA, dragging them to the negotiating table for three times in a year. And they've got that long-term sort of stability in there. They've got this new, in the new TV deals and media deals are coming up soon. I mean, I think there's, you know, I don't want to be one of those people that says, you know, open the wallet, right? Because that's a simplistic way to look at it.
It's too easy.
But in general, I think there's been signs of change, but it's just been sort of plodding in some situations because, you know, let's be honest, they're behind schedule on the training facility, right? The team is jerry-rigging their approach to the day-to-day environment, you know, where they're training and fitting in a weight room into Audi Field by making the press conference room smaller and stuff like that. And that's all that there's cleverness and there's intelligence there and sort of making that all work. But eventually the team's going to be out, you know, out and loud. And I mean, everything, there's still a sense of flux, I guess I would say around that. And I can't say with certainty, you know, when that changes or if it will change.
Yeah. And I think that's the conditioning that the club has done for the fan base. So, you know, this isn't a problem. So I want to say it's a problem of their own making, but I saw the Denny DeJohnson hire and I was like, great, let's see what she does. I saw the Losada hire. Sounds exciting. Let's see what he does. I saw the Rushton hire. Oh, that's really cool. Let's see what she brings to the table. Whereas I think if I was an Atlanta United fan, whatever they're doing, I'm like, awesome, this is taking us to the next level again. Because they had done everything. They've dotted their I's and they crossed their T's. So as a fan of that band, a fan of that team, my music radio jock is coming out. As a fan of that
team. They signed a major label deal.
They signed a deal.
Right?
Look, if Linkin Park puts out an album, I'm buying it because they have done, Imagine Dragons puts out an album. And everybody, look, all non-Imagine Dragon fans are like, whatever. But that's Atlanta United. They're the Imagine Dragons of MLS, which is the quote that we will take away from this whole episode.
Yeah, there's the pull quote. Yeah.
But it's, you know, look, they have amassed, back to my credit with a new employee, they've amassed a ton of credit with their fan base. And even though they swung and missed on almost everything last year, their fan base immediately re-energized over the new managerial hire because they more often than not nailed it. DC United has been in the reverse situation. So, look, I am hopeful. I am optimistic. You know for a fact, Charlie, that I am not a fan of the half measures that United has taken, and I'm a big fan of them committing to a full measure and following it through. It feels like they are now, but I still, as a United fan who's been burned the last 7 or 8 years, am like, okay, this looks promising. Please follow through. And that's kind of why I asked you about the mindset and when it changed. You're right about Armas. He came from the Red Bull system, so they might have already thought to themselves, okay, we're going to bring in more of a manager who is more of a pressing style from the Red Bull thing, so we probably do need analytics. To me, the thing that feels different about this chapter of DC United, and even feels different from Wayne Rooney, is they brought in Wayne Rooney and said, we're done. This feels like they brought in Losada, and they didn't go, we're done. Now they brought in Lucy Rushton, which is another piece of that puzzle that was needed that also helps Losada. And now I'm like, okay, now this is two steps in the right direction. I'm looking for the third. And the third, I don't know what the third is. It could be a very vague thing, or it could be something as simplistic as this summer transfer window. Rushton, Casper, Losada get together, finalize a player profile, and we see one or two people come in, and they come in fitting the profile. It's not just big name DP. It's not just scrap heap MLS veteran. It's a, hey, we brought this person in because they are fit. They have shown that they can work in a press system. They're not being utilized properly in the system we're bringing them in, but they will be utilized properly in our system, and you will see a high performing player from the summer transfer window. That's kind of the next thing I'm looking for, I think.
And let me to add to that, I would say I've talked about Red Bulls a lot in this episode. You know, hopefully that hasn't annoyed the hardcores, the old OGs too much. But look up the road to Philly.
Yes.
I wrote something about this for US Soccer Players last week. Philly, and it's just two games, right? But there's widespread perception in MLS that, man, so Philly had a career year. Everybody stepped up, won their first hardware. They win the Shield. They proved the concept they've been building for almost a decade is it can work.
It can work.
Then they sold their two best 11 players, their academy products, McKenzie and Aronson, for, you know, each of them, they got seven-figure transfers for both of them. So it's natural to say, well, how can they possibly build on that, right? If everybody had a great year at the same time, and then you sell the two best players, or arguably the two best players from that group, there's going to be a slip, right? And then they come out in a really tricky Champions League tie, their first time ever in CONCACAF Champions League. They have to play Saprissa. They have to open on the road in Costa Rica, one of the worst places to play for American national teams and clubs ever. It's Saprissa, and they I don't want to pump it up too much, but they kind of blew the doors off of an established Costa Rican club over two legs. And I was like, these guys might be better. Right. And so Ray Gaddis retires, club legend, you know, institution at fullback, this kid Mbizo that they've been grooming for this moment for years. And they've convinced a player with Cameroon national team aspirations to bide his time with their reserve team and to prove himself in USL championship. And then he comes in and he's like one of the best players in the field, is right back, dropping dimes, you know, defending well. He's good again in the segments of the game yesterday in Columbus that I got to watch. You know, people think Paxton Aronson, Brendan's little brother, may be better than him, right? They have this. They didn't sign anybody
with
all that money. They made $12 million and they promoted a bunch of homegrowns. And of course, there's naturally some grumbling, but they have built a system of interchangeable parts. You look around the league, Philly, this is true for Philly and the Red Bulls, right? You could say, okay, the only one they've sold abroad is Tyler Adams, but I know the MLS transactions aren't as sexy to people. They don't catch as much attention. They involve this monopoly money. People are like, what is allocation money, right? But there is a proven market for products of the Red Bulls and Union systems because they're starting all around the league, right? Because they built their whole structure from U12 up to identify a certain type of profile, to bring it into the system, train it a certain way, develop it and move it. And if it doesn't quite take for that, their club's first team, or they can get a better return on their investment by selling or trading it off, they do. And that should be the long-term process, I think. If you've brought in Russian and Losada with a long-term mentality, now you start to build your academy and your second team around that, and you're not just sort of picking up the best players you see on the youth fields of
right.
Virginia and Maryland. You build your identity from the root to the fruit, and then you're really cooking.
It's a great point. I would urge you to check out, if you were really fascinated by Charlie's answer there, to check out his column on the homegrown system in the Philadelphia Union, and specifically YSA Academy.
Yeah.
And read more about it. It's fascinating. We did a whole episode on it back in the fall. I would urge you to check out that episode as well. That's what excites me. Look, would I love to be LAFC or Atlanta United or a team that fills all its DP slots with multi-million dollar players? Absolutely. I understand, and I'm realistic enough to think that that's not the DC United model, at least at this moment under this ownership group.
Not yet,
exactly. But I'm okay with that. If to your point about, well, they sold Aronson, they sold McKenzie, there's going to be a drop-off. I think you know this, so me saying it's not to you, but they planned on this. They planned on no drop-off. They planned on, we're going to have these two guys for this year. We're going to put up a good season. We're going to sell these guys. And you are going to see us next season with new guys that are going to replace these guys. And you're not supposed to see a drop off. It's not a situation of, hey, Aronson's gone, we're screwed now. That was our best player. That wasn't the thought process going into last season, coming out of last season, and going into this season. They knew that they were going to replace rather than drop off. And, you know, they brought in a German American who no one had heard of, and the kid looked like he fit in, at least from the CCL match that I saw. So it's one of those situations where they've already eyeballed who they want to bring in when they get rid of the kid that you think the whole team is built around. That's, for me, the exciting thing about Rushton, especially, but also Losada, is let's put our culture together. Let's put our thought process together. Let's put our DC United player profile together. And then let's just fill in blanks when we do sell our kids for $12 million. And let's put that money back into the academy. And let's have our USL team play the same way that our first team plays under this unique system. And then, to your point about Losada, when he gets a big offer to go somewhere in Europe, we have already the USL coach, if you want to just go. Or you say, Losada, who's the guy to replace you? Who's the girl, the woman to replace you? Because we've got that structure in place of this is how United plays. And I think, for me, at the end of the day, the last 2 months, the exciting thing is it feels like the ownership group has finally said, okay, this is the direction we're going to go. And these hires, which is kind of the point of this whole episode and why I wanted to have you on, these hires feel bigger than these hires.
And if you're still someone who wants to see elite talent, you want to see seven-figure transfer fees, being splashed by your club, I would look across to Sporting Kansas City. They've been doing something very comparable to this process we're talking about over a period of many years. And it was sustainable and even profitable in general terms, as best we can tell, enough for them to go out and splash right. $8 million or $10 million or whatever it was and just smash their transfer club transfer record on Alan Pulido,
right.
bringing in an elite number nine, which they thought was the sort of capstone they needed to get over the hump. So if you do this well, you can make money and then you can spend that money however you want.
Exactly. And I think, to me, that's I love the Sporting analogy because they are the union 5 years into the future where it's okay. But for me, the union are actually ahead of the Sporting schedule because they've been selling players for profit. They've begun that process and they took that $12 million and they bought a couple of players for a handful of million. And you're right. You do that for the next three or four years, you've got a war chest now of $50 million. And if you see a guy who is going to fit your system that is a star player, you're like, yeah, I'll give you $15 million for him because I have it. It's in our bank account already from what we've been doing for the last 5 years. The Sporting KC analogy is fantastic.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, the fun thing about Philly that I really respect is their identity is so clear now, and they can go and clear. I mean, I think Ernst Tanner, their sporting director, must get a kick out of this. He somehow goes to the French second division and the Venezuelan league, and he finds these guys that are like
right.
deeply Philly, right? Like Brujo Martinez is their kind of the linchpin of their midfield right now, and he's from Venezuela. And you would think he grew up on water ice, like booing people at Phillies games. He's rugged. He's rangy. He's nasty. He seems to like kicking people. I mean, Jim Curtin called him violent. He's like, he has this violent style. But it's like, I don't know how you have to just give credit that they don't have the 50 mil, right? But they've gotten to a point now where I don't think they feel they need it.
Right.
They derive a satisfaction out of digging up guys that epitomize who they want to be from all over the world.
Right. Which you're right. That is that mentality is so Philly of, yeah, nah, we don't. And full disclosure, I'm from Philly. My kids had a soccer tournament in Bel Air this weekend. And we were leaving to come back to Germantown. And you get on 95 and it's 95 South, Washington, 95 North, New York. And I said to my wife, man, this is some bullshit, man. There's a huge freaking city on the way to New York, and you're acting like it doesn't even exist. And that is the Philly mentality is no respect, shadow of the little brother, the little brother of New York, not as sexy and cosmopolitan as D.C. So when you're driving on 95, it's never Philadelphia. It's always New York. And that's the mentality. And you're right. They've put together a Philly type of team from guys who were nowhere near growing up in Philly.
Yeah. And we'll see. I mean, that's going to have a different flavor in D.C., right?
Right.
Everything you just said. And that's the path, that this new look front office is on.
Cautious optimism. Is that a good way to be if I'm a D.C. United fan? So basically what you would say to me, Charlie? Cautious optimism?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And it is going to be a journey, and it is a, again, and I have a luxury as being sort of a neutral observer of the league, right? I have the luxury of speaking this way, and I know it's not the same quite when you're a fan, but I think if you ask Quakes fans, right, they've been on this journey with Almeida that has I think it has gone beyond wins and losses, because there's a philosophy and an identity and a relationship to the game that is beyond the final score. And obviously, like, if you lose every game, that doesn't gets old fast.
But to your point, there were rumors this offseason that he was getting an offer to go back to Mexico. And based on the results, if you're a fan of San Jose, your first thought should be, okay, fine, whatever. But it was
barely made the playoffs.
Exactly,
lost in the first round.
Exactly, but for everything that I was reading was the supporters were like, no, 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 we can't lose him. And that would have been when Tata left, you could see Atlanta United fans going, this is a disaster. But he brought a cup home.
Mm-hmm. And Tata's a great example, right? This is he said it might have been the week of MLS Cup. You know, the bags are always packed. The suitcase is always next to the door.
But for Almeida, it was, yeah, you know, we're not as bad as we were, but I wouldn't call us good by any means. But they were still, they had the same reaction as Atlanta United fans of, no, 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 we can't lose this guy yet.
Mm-hmm. And look, when you support a team, right, like you obviously, you want the glory, you want to watch your team win, you want to have that good feeling of stacking up victories, you know, hoisting trophies, being in the mix, right? But you also want to see a quality product, right?
Right.
You want to see yourself and your community reflected in the team that wears those colors. And I think we're at a point now in MLS where, you know, we can have those conversations. It can go beyond W's and L's and D's because there's so much soccer out there, right? I mean, DC United is never going to. No MLS team most likely is going to stack up a collection of superstars like Man City. And you can turn on with basic cable, you can turn on your TV and watch the best in the world every Saturday and Sunday morning. And MLS is maybe not in my lifetime probably going to eclipse that. But it can be something it's entertaining and engrossing in a different way and on a local level. And I think I think United fans are ready for that. They're open to that. And even if there's some bumps and bruises here, Losada is sort of setting the stage for a really interesting story.
Yeah.
And I think that matters.
Yeah, I do too. And I loved your comment about the reflection of the community, because I think that's really important as well. And look, he or she is our person, goes a long way to papering over some of this other stuff. And I think that's what the ownership group has kind of failed to connect the dots on. Is that kind of, hey, look, they're part of us, they're part of our community, they're part of our city, they're part of our culture, gives you a lot more leeway to do some of the things. And when those bumps do come along the road, that's what's going to get you through. And it feels like, again, cautious optimism that I feel like we're on that road to do it. So, Charlie, I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to kind of get some top line stuff on Rushton and Losada as a team, and I think we did that. We got to revisit, though, my friend. So sometime in the middle of the season, we'll see where we're at, and we'll see if I'm ranting and raving again, or if I'm still in this, hey, look, below the playoff line, but I'm really liking what I'm seeing, because that's really all I want, is to just enjoy and be invested in what I'm seeing.
Yeah, listen, if you can have these guys playing in early August, like they're playing on Saturday, I will be.
We'll be fine. Everything will be. I don't even. You don't even have to tell me the points. If you can say they're going to be playing in August like they're playing now, I will go, great. I got my money's worth. So that's fine. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Charlie Boehm, thank you very much, my friend. We will talk to you at some point during the season. So, again, MLSsoccer.com, SoccerWire.com. Just follow him. What's the Twitter? Because that's where you really throw out all your stuff.
Yeah, @CBOEHM.
There you go. Charles Boehm, thank you, my friend. Appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure.
We'll be right back.
more show information, go to pitchpass.com.